everybody. Welcome to Magic the Amateuring, episode 5.
Yay.
Ben, can you believe we've made it 5 episodes?
I can't believe we're at the big 05.
What wedding anniversary gift is that?
It's blue mana. It's the blue mana.
Blue mana.
Wedding anniversary.
Okay. Well, we're here. I'm Maria. To my right, we have...
This is Ben. It's always been Ben, and it'll always be Ben.
All right. And to my left, we usually have Megan sitting with us,
but
Megan...
she abandoned us.
Abandoned us. Mm. For life.
Yeah.
Well, not for life, but
for
I mean...
For her life.
For her life in adventure.
Yeah, she chose her own life over us.
Which I'm not going to forgive her for. No. But we have a guest this week sitting in, guest host.
Yay!
Welcome, Nels.
Hi, it's Nels.
Hey, Nels, thanks for joining us on this podcast.
Thanks for letting me crash.
Thanks for jumping in our canoe.
we do the
podcast from a canoe, you guys.
We're on the river right now. And it's going to get pretty rough. Mm. Okay.
What have I signed up for?
Right, exactly. On this show, we are magic amateurs, and we are learning to play and hoping to appeal to other amateur players out there, or perhaps players who haven't played in a while. They used to play, and they want to get back into it, and that might be Nels in this case.
Yeah, kind of.
Can you tell me just a little bit, when did you start to play?
I started when I was in high school. The Dark set had just come out, so it would have been... What's the one after Unlimited? Not Unlimited. After Unlimited.
Revised.
I think
it was after Revised. That was probably like 97 or 98.
It was 94, actually.
Like 94? Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. I remember. Yeah. I'm old. it was that set, and then The Dark had just come out, and it was getting harder and harder to get things like Antiquities and Legends and those kinds of sets.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I started.
So you're like, you know, Obi-Wan.
if Obi-Wan wasn't very good at what he did in the beginning and then stopped
doing it. He wasn't. A lot of people don't know this.
Yeah,
Obi-Wan sucked at the Jedi.
Balls. But then he just happened to not die.
That's
yeah.
True. He always had a bad feeling about it. I think.
You guys can contact us out there at magicTheAmaturing@gmail.com and magicTheAmaturing.com. We now have a website with all our podcasts on it.
Cool.
And on MTGcast. Thanks, guys, for hosting us. So,
hi
Nels. It's a really cozy setup we have going on here, and we're all sick. So,
it's true.
I'm eating the halls just for solidarity.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nels. We like to start off the episode with lessons learned. Some kind of lesson that Megan or I have been working on since the last episode. Hmm. And this week we're going to talk about when to keep a hand and when to mulligan. Or if you're cool, when to mull. That's what you say.
Mull to 6.
Mull to 6. I'm going to mull to 5. Fuck. That's usually what you say.
Both before and after you mull to 5, usually.
Yeah. And I remember the first time I heard this was when we were playing over here and you were live tweeting Megan and my... magic game.
Sure, yeah.
And I read your tweet and I was like, what the heck does Maria mulls the 6 mean?
Were you reading the tweet in the middle of the game while he was live tweeting?
Was...
Were you watching the own were you watching the coverage of your own game?
I was live tweeting and then also reading aloud the live tweets as they came in.
That was election night.
Yeah.
When we learned Ben looked exactly like Rachel Maddow.
It's true. Oh, my God. It kind of is true.
It's true. I could have a career in journalism.
So, Ben.
Yeah.
When should we keep and when should we mulligan?
Well, there's no right answer. So
great.
We should probably just all give up and not try. I mean, the real answer is you should mulligan when you think a 6-card hand will give you a better shot to win than your 7-card hand, which is it's kind of obvious. But some general guidelines are if you look at your hand and it doesn't look like it's going to do much. So, I mean, if you you don't have enough mana, it's usually an easy mulligan. I mean, if I look at a hand and there's only one land in it and it's a 7-card hand,
yeah.
Or if there's only one spell in it, usually I'll just mulligan that every time.
I haven't thought about the spells portion of it.
Yeah. If you have too many lands, that's just as bad and maybe worse than not having enough lands. So that's a reason.
How many is too many lands?
Usually, like, if you have 3 or 4, that's usually perfect. And then if you have 5, depending on what the spells are, that might be good. And if you have, sometimes 5 can be too many depending on your deck. But I would say, there's no one hard and fast thing I can say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Having the wrong colors is another good reason to mulligan. If you're red and blue and you have all red lands in your hand and all blue spells, that's bad news. You're not going to do anything for a long time.
And if you have a specifically fast deck, you have to keep that in mind. If you, draw and you have just really slow cards.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you remember having this problem, Nels?
I'm actually trying to remember back when we played. I think the mulligan rules were different.
Yes, that's probably true.
Oh. Because we had,
I think it was just you get one mulligan and then that's it.
Yeah, so now the way it works is you draw 7 cards initially, and then if you want to, you can mulligan down to 6. And then you can mulligan again down to 5. You could theoretically mulligan all the way to 0 if you wanted to, but...
draw no cards.
Yeah. usually 4 is as low as people go.
Yeah.
And then they usually find themselves asleep.
Back in your day, when you mulligan, did you take a new 7 hand?
I believe so, yeah. And I don't even think we started doing that until everybody... And when I say we, I mean all the people sort of in my high school group.
Yeah.
We had been playing for a while, and maybe we read something in Scry magazine that said, hey, you can do that.
What is that?
Scry. It was a magazine. Back before the internet was a thing, you'd buy Scry magazine, and you'd read about all the latest stuff.
S-C-R-Y?
E.
S-C-R-Y-E, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
What does Scry mean?
It means, like, to divine something, like to scry something, like
right, like I've got sticks that are floating in my tea and they're letting me know what's up.
But there,
like,
was so
cinnamon
many
sticks.
Delicious
scry sticks. There was so many times I remember where the entire game lived or died by, like, oh, I got a bad hand, I lost. Like, that's how we play it,
Oh, wow. And it's
really annoying.
And that's what mulliganing really is about, is being realistic about, what are your shots with this hand? In general, like, you don't want a hand that needs you to get really lucky before you're going to do anything in the game. If you're just like, oh, man, this hand will be great as long as I draw 2 mountains in a row, and then I draw a creature that costs 3 mana, and then I draw a removal spell.
And now, since amazing. when I recently got back into it about a year ago, I would fall victim to that all the time. Because I'd have a 7 card hand with 1 land, and it'd be like, this
I'll
is going to be
it.
Super
no,
cool
no worries.
If a bunch of things happen, and they don't happen, and then I lost.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you ever play poker, it's like drawing, it's like, oh, if I just get these 2 cards, I'll have a straight. It's like,
That's kind of how poker works.
Yeah. So, and the trick there is, if you don't have a ton of experience, like, you don't necessarily know how certain hands will play out. So that's my real advice, is just have more experience.
Be better at what you do.
Sure. Question and answer.
Ding.
All right, Ben.
What up?
Your question this week is about splashing.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, that was one of our euphemisms of the week, or 2 weeks ago.
Splashing?
2 drops and splashing.
Sure.
Pee and poop. We like it. We keep the bar high here.
First of all, I don't even know what splashing in the context of magic is. And now I'm thinking about peeing and pooping.
I have a bathroom.
Good. Splashing.
Tell me, Ben.
Usually, how many colors do you have in a deck, usually?
2,
yeah. So we've been playing a lot of draft, the way drafting works. I don't know if you've ever drafted before, Nels, but
he's nodding yes.
You open up some packs and you pull cards out of the, you pull one card at a time out of the pack and you pass them around, and at the end you make a 40 card deck. So usually how many colors would you put in a deck like that?
Two or three.
Yeah. So like the vast majority of Magic decks are like two colors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially limited decks. But, you know, sometimes you've got one card in a third color that's just so good that you just want it in your deck.
Yep.
You want it so bad. What really do you bad. Do? What do you do, Maria?
You splash for it.
Splash for it.
You do a big cannonball into the pool of magic.
So you splash for it. So you put a few lands that can make that color mana, and then you put the spell in, and you just hope. So the trick to splashing is you don't want to mess up the rest of your deck too bad. You don't want to, like, jeopardize your ability to cast the rest of your spells. And as a good rule of thumb, for if you're splashing for one card, and that card only has, you know, one mana symbol of the off color, you want to have like two sources in your deck, because then the odds are good that you'll draw one of those sources before you draw that card, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you have a 2/3 chance or something of drawing one of the other ones before you draw that card, which is not bad. So that's, like, as a general rule of thumb, that's what I try to go by. And then if you have two spells, then you probably want two or three sources. And if you have three spells, then you probably want, you know, three or four. And it also depends on how specifically you're going to get that mana. Like, usually just having lands of that color is not good enough. Usually you want, you know, at least one source that can... is like a dual land, you can make two different kinds of mana, or something that can search your library for whatever color you're missing.
Do dual lands still exist?
Yes and no. So the original dual lands...
I have an interesting story about the original dual lands.
Ooh. So the original dual lands, Maria, you may not know this, they had no drawbacks. It would just be like...
Like you could, like nowadays they enter tapped unless you right. pay, etc. Yeah,
the old dual lands were just like, oh, this is a Taiga. It makes green mana, makes red mana, and it just enters play untapped. And there's no drawback other than you can only have four of them in your deck. And yeah,
sure.
So now they do make dual lands, but it'll be stuff like enters play tapped or like. You want it to interplay and tapped, you have to pay two life or something like that, or
they call those pain lands.
Shock. Well, those are shock lands. Pain lands would do one damage to you every time you tap them for a colored for a colored source. I know. There's also fetch lands where it's like you pay a life and then you get to search for you know, either a forest or a mountain or whatever other mm-hmm. combination it was. And what other kinds they have? Oh, they have. They also have lands that interplay untapped only if you control, like, a mountain or a forest.
So how do those cards come into play in terms of splashing your deck? Like, is that... Would you count that as just a...
Well, so most of those are rare. In the new set, Return to Ravnica, they have the gates, which will produce two colors of mana, and they just always come into play tapped. And so those are really useful. They have a small drawback in that they come into play tapped, but usually it's not a big deal, and... they can really help you splash because it basically counts as two different colors. So, like, if you have two guild gates and you want to splash for black, say, then, you know, it's almost a free splash because you can just put those in and you don't even have to worry about not having enough mana for all your colors. Does that answer your question, Maria?
It does.
Do you feel like a splash master?
My toilet is a splash master.
Innuendo is just flying everywhere.
The reason I asked is because I did splash at my last draft. I had Celestnya and splash black for Vraska, which I drew in my third pack.
Mm.
And I had also, like, in my final deck, I think four cards that were black total.
Mm.
And I was just sitting there like, oh my God, I don't know how many swamps I should put in.
Well, four is a lot. Unless you have a lot of dual lands, a lot of ways to get that mana. That can be kind of tricky. So usually what I'll ask is it really worth it to splash for those four cards? If you can avoid doing that, it's usually way better.
Okay, so you think that just having one card to splash for is better than like having the, you know, you're going to have the swamps in there anyway to splash for that one card, so why not?
Well, if you have four really powerful cards in that color that you want to splash for, that's fine. But if they're not really powerful, then it's not worth making your deck less consistent.
Yeah, each one of those takes away one of your the color that you aren't, like your main color.
Right. Having like a mediocre card in your normal color that you know you is can better. Cast almost all the time is way better than having, you know, a mediocre card in your off color.
Okay. So for one card splash, you would put in two sources? That's your idea?
Usually, yeah.
Okay.
Either two sources or one source and one way to find that source.
Okay. Well, I feel so much better educated on this now.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, everybody. It's time for some Amazeballs tips for learners.
Amazeballs.
Amazeballs.
Is that a card that I don't know about?
I wish there were cards named Amazeballs.
What it does... is
Amazeball Lightning.
Yeah, but it,
I was thinking it'd be more like the Big Brother or the Will-O-Wisp. It'd be like the Amazeballs.
Sure. The Amazeball.
It's little balls.
O-1 regenerate.
They'd be the Big Brother that like joined the circus. Mm. The Amazeballs.
It's little lightning balls, and it's one damage, and it'll take out a flock of birds.
If the card type
read on the card,
the card type is flock of
target
birds.
Bird.
It would say
destroy target flock of birds.
No, it would say name a creature type.
Sure.
Does
if
one
it's birds, destroy target bird.
If it's birds.
If it's not birds, you're an idiot. You should have said birds. Okay. Anyway, we should invent a card every
week.
Yeah,
we should. We're obviously very good at it.
Remember that. In this week's Tips for Learners, I'm choosing to talk about this because it actually really helped me in the last draft I played.
This was some learning I laid down.
Yes.
Maria had a question for me, and her question was, what's so good about the card Dramatic Rescue?
Right.
So Nels is holding the card. Nels, why don't you read what that card does?
Dramatic Rescue, and it's a picture of a bird saving a man, and it's an instant, one white, one blue. Return target creature to its owner's hand. You gain two life. I never thought I'd be so glad to see two tons of beak and claws bearing down on me at the speed of an arrow, says Mirela Azorius Hussar.
You did that really good.
That was great. You should do that professionally.
Thank you. Flavor text reader, professional.
That was my job in high school when you get those tests. Okay. The reason I asked was because to me, on its face value, Ben had, he repeatedly had said, it's not usually worth it to use two cards, deal with one card, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And looking at it, it looks at its on its face value to be that kind of usage.
Yeah, so this can be kind of a deceptive card because if you look at it, you're like, well, what good does this do? It just, all it does is slow them down for a turn. Is that really that great? Well, when you put it that way, that's not that useful, and it is card disadvantage because... your opponent doesn't lose any cards. You just gain a little bit of tempo. But as it turns out, this card is really good in this set. And I think also a lot of people didn't realize when they started drafting Return to Ravnica how good this card was. And so I think everyone's opinion of it has improved by a lot. So the question is, why is it so good? And so
Ben,
as an exercise, I was like, okay, let's write down every possible way that you can use Dramatic Rescue in this set.
Right. And you came up with 9 different ways to use it.
Nine.
So
nine times.
I want you, dear listener, to pause us and think of 9 distinct uses for Dramatic Rescue. We're going to eat.
This is a dramatic pause for Dramatic Rescue. I just needed to point that out.
Nice.
We're going to eat a peanut butter sandwich while you think of it.
Only one.
All three of us.
Do you guys want to share? I like Skippy. It's all natural Skippy, though.
Boo.
What?
Preservatives.
Hydrogenates. No, it doesn't have any. It's all natural.
No, yeah, I like preservatives.
Oh.
Me too.
MSG.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you've hope you're back.
You didn't just pause and leave. Well, this is a good place to stop listening to this podcast. Pause. Bye.
9 different uses, shall we? Use number 1. Destroy a 7-7 ooze or other token. Because it's a token, it cannot be returned to the hand and is therefore destroyed.
Yeah.
That's right. That's a tricky little trick.
Yeah, there's a ton of tokens in this set. Because the Green-White Guild, that's kind of their jam. They just make tokens all over the place. And this card just straight up kills a token for 2 mana at instant speed, and that's pretty awesome.
But are these are good tokens? Usually tokens are pretty, token.
Yeah, that's a good question. Good point, Nils. Usually tokens are just like shitty 1/1s that don't do anything.
Like a goat 0/1.
Yeah, like a 0/1 goat token, great. But in this set, there's actually a lot of really good tokens. There's like 1/1 flying bird tokens, there's 2/2 vigilant knight tokens, and there's a ton of 3/3 centaur tokens. Yeah, that's pretty beefy, so just being able to destroy one of those is pretty sweet. And especially if they're about to copy it, like there's all these cards that let them copy a token. So if you can destroy their only token in response to that, then they lose their token and they don't get another token.
Spell fizzles.
Yeah. Take that, Green-White Mage. You've been owned.
Use number 2.
Use number 2 is to bounce a creature after they've double blocked. So double blocking can be kind of a liability. If they block your big creature with 2 of their smaller creatures and you bounce one of them, you just killed their one creature. And that's pretty sweet. And you saved your own creature.
Yep.
So
that's a cool move.
Yeah.
So that removes the damage if you... Like, they end up not dealing their damage?
Yeah, if you do it before combat damage happens, then yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Use 3. Bounce a creature in response to Knightly Valor. Tempo swing, plus you get to kill their sweet enchantment.
Yeah, there's a lot of enchantments, auras, or enchant creatures, if you're old school like Gnolls.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
In this set, they're actually really good. Mostly because, usually auras are pretty bad. Because you kind of go all in on a creature and you give your opponent a chance to 2-for-1 you by killing that creature. But in this set, most of the removal isn't that great. So like it'll only do a few damage or like won't be enough to kill the creature once it has the aura on it. But like Dramatic Rescue doesn't give a fuck.
That should be the flavor text.
On Dramatic Rescue.
Doesn't give a
referring
fuck.
Referring to itself. Dramatic Rescue don't give a fuck.
So yeah, Dramatic Rescue lets you punish people for playing those auras that they think they're just getting away with.
Right, and you just, right before we recorded this podcast, you did this to me.
It wasn't Dramatic Rescue, though.
No, it wasn't.
Annihilating Fire.
Either way.
Yeah, but
it made me
you
mad.
Felt it.
It hurt.
It's still lodged in your nose.
Right in my chunks.
Yep.
Splashed in your chunks. Does Unsummon not exist in this set?
There is no Unsummon in this set. Dramatic Rescue is the closest thing, but yeah. Unsummon is it's a similar spell, Maria. Unsummon is 1 blue mana, return target creature to its owner's hand.
Okay.
And it's an instant. And it's a pretty common card. It's been in tons of sets. But that's like... That card is useful for all the same reasons that Dramatic Rescue is.
Use 4. Bounce a blocker to get through a bunch of damage. Like if they had Towering Indrik.
Yeah.
Bounce Towering Indrik, attack with all your flyers.
Yeah, usually people set up a plan. They'll be like, okay, well, I'll attack with all these guys, and I'll leave this guy back to block. And if you just bounce that dude and get in for, like, 8 damage... sometimes that's good enough to like win the game or put you really close to winning the game.
Yeah. Use 5. Bounce a guy with Knightly Valor, Pursuit of Flight, Deviant Glee, Stab Wound, etc.
Yeah, so this is similar to the number 3, the Knightly Valor one.
Yeah.
But that one was like in response to casting it, whereas this one is like if they just have it sitting around, you can just get rid of it. Or like if there's a stab wound on one of your guys. Stab wound is like, oh, it's so good.
Nels, Ben loves no stab wound.
It gives your creature -2/-2, and you take 2 damage every turn. I know.
Wow. Much like a stab wound, it festers.
Yeah. Wow. Right, just like, you know what having a real stab wound is like, right, Nels?
Yeah, I play magic, right?
You've been stabbed in prison.
Trade
for all my magic.
Trade goes wrong. Yeah. Trade goes wrong, and you end up with a stab wound.
Back alley stabbing.
So if you have dramatic rescue, you can not only get rid of that pesky stab wound, but you get to replay your creature. So that's awesome.
Yep. Use 6. Bounce a guy in response to giant growth. Make your opponent waste a trick.
Yep. So having a dramatic rescue in your hand when you go to attack or when you go to block just gives you a lot of insurance. That there, you know, sometimes people try to deceive you, Maria.
What?
Not everyone.
What?
I know. But if you have a dramatic rescue and you can just send a griffin in to save the person in response, it's a good backup plan.
Okay, so as your opponent, you've attacked, your opponent blocks and plays giant growth on you, right? So
on his blocker, right?
And so you're bouncing his blocker.
Yeah, so got it. I mean, you could also bounce your dude, but it's better to bounce their dude because then they have to replay it.
Oh, God, that would piss me off if somebody did that, so that's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Use 7, bounce an attacker and gain 2 life to prevent losing.
Yeah, so if someone's coming in and they think they're going to win and you just bounce one of their guys and you gain 2 life, they may not have had a plan for what happens if the game continues another turn, so that's always good.
Use 8, save a guy from removal.
Yeah, if you've got the mana open and they want to kill your dude, or if they're maybe they cast Launch Party and they had to sacrifice a creature to kill your dude, then dramatic rescue that guy, save him.
Only guys and dudes, though.
Only guys and dudes.
Yep. And Nels, thank you.
Just call him like I see him.
Magic is male-oriented language. Use 9. Okay, did you think of all 9? Bounce and replay a guy after attacking so it can block.
Yep. This is, I mean, we did these in order of usefulness, so this is the least useful, but yeah, sometimes you just want to untap a guy and you don't mind spending a ton of mana to do it, so why not?
Sure.
Oh. You can see from all these different uses how versatile this card is, and so that's one of the things that makes it so sweet is like, it's almost never, like, just no good. You can usually get some kind of use for it, and there's lots of ways to get a card out of it, so it's usually not card disadvantage. And having flexibility in your cards is really good.
Yeah. All right, 4 uses for Rootborn Defenses. This is a popular little card.
Yeah, all right, so.
Nels.
Rootborn Defenses, 2 colorless, 1 white. Instant, populate. Creatures you control are indestructible this turn. What's populate, you ask? To populate, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of a creature token you control. Damage and effects that say destroy don't destroy indestructible creatures. Wait, so this is, you propagate like already a token that's already there, you get another one of those tokens?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what does the picture look like to you?
It looks like a guy holding an axe in armor, but also sort of entwined with something I would describe as root-borne defenses, probably.
But is there flavor text?
No, there's not.
Dang, you should it. Make some up.
I'm defending in a root-borne manner, says Gerinius of Huskar.
Nice.
In a root-borne manner.
I actually really like this game. It sounds like I'm being really condescending, but I...
We believe you.
Thanks, Nels.
Anyway.
I bring this one up because Ben challenged me to list 4 uses for Rootborn, so pause now and try and think of 4 distinct uses.
Another sandwich.
Yes. You don't get it. We're going to have a pure jelly sandwich this time.
Smuckers.
Gross. Has anyone ever here eaten just jelly between 2 breads?
Probably. I don't know.
Welcome back. All right, and I thought of 4, which, number 1, I was impressed with myself for being able to think of 4. Number one, populate your tokens, obviously.
Mm, yep. Get another dude. It's always good.
Number two, save your creatures from dying in combat.
Yep. Sometimes you block and you don't want your guys to die. Sometimes you're not ready to part.
To accept
that. I mean, all life is fleeting, but just what would you give for one more day with a loved one?
Number three.
Answer the question. What would you do?
Yeah, what would you give, Maria?
What would you give?
Well,
three mana?
It depends on who it is.
good answer. Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes you just don't have three mana to spend on a loved one.
Sometimes you're just like, one more day? What else am I going to get out of this day? Realistically.
sure.
Use three. Play in response to your token being killed, so you keep a version one out there before he's destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get to... basically, you're trading Rootborn defenses for whatever they use to kill your dude.
Yep.
That's pretty sweet.
And number four, this is the most sweet move, I think. Play during combat to populate and surprise block a smaller dude or surprise double block a bigger dude and kill it, and all your guys are still indestructible.
Yay. And here double block is pretty sweet because your guys are indestructible, so...
Yeah. I actually used that move in my last draft.
Which move? Number four?
Number four.
Mm, nice.
And... Lord knows how I freaking remembered to use it like that, but he had no idea. He did not see it coming. I double blocked, killed his dude. None of my dudes died, and I got a token out of it. Afterwards, he was like, "That was a real pro move," and I felt so cool.
Is it Joe Namath who said that?
It was. He plays at our local shop.
Joe Namath. That's a joke from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm more than that.
If only we could send this podcast back to In the Dark.
Yeah.
He's got punchline written all over him.
You guys, Joe Namath definitely listens to this podcast. He's definitely done it.
If you guys know Joe Namath, we want to get him as our next guest host.
Yep. We'll Skype him in. All right, everybody. So, as you know, Gate Crash coming out really soon. Mm. Who's excited?
I am.
Are you excited, Nels? Are you gonna get back on the horse?
Probably.
And by horse, I don't mean the street name for heroin.
I'm going to do both, actually. Okay. I have a lot of excess money.
Are you going to go play in a pre-release for Gate Crash?
Maria just failed to drink.
Spilled Diet Mountain Dew all over herself, head to foot.
I can't concentrate.
If only she could have been dramatically rescued
in that situation. Or had some sort of rootborn defense.
Yeah.
I think I might... My friends, who are actually the friends I played with in high school, sort of got back into it again. And they... I participated in one a couple of years ago. They do draft tournaments at their house and everything. And
nice.
They do it basically for every new set. So I might join in on one of those.
Awesome.
I recommend it. I'm going to be attending the pre-release in Texas.
Damn.
Yes. That's where Megan has escaped to.
We should say that we live in Minnesota.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. And it's cold here.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing some cool stuff for this pre-release. So look forward to some podcasts on that.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to the Simic Guild.
Right.
Mostly because all their cards have weird ass names. Like they have a card named Experiment One, and its creature type is Human Ooze.
And that is also our euphemism of the week. Fill in the blanks.
I think that is hilarious. So I want to see what all those combos are. So I'm going to play those guys.
Right.
Seems pretty sweet.
Simic, I'm doing two pre-releases. Simic is going to be my second.
Ooh, what are you going to do in your first one?
Boros. Because I've only been talking about it forever, so I kind of can't do it. Can't not do it.
What do you like about Boros, Maria?
I like that it is basically Rakdos with flying.
So Boros is red-white, and they're very aggressive. They have lots of... They want to attack all the time.
Yeah.
Wait, so are you saying, like, these are groups of thing.
Yeah.
Two colors.
So in this next set, there's five different guilds, and each guild is a two-color combination. Oh. And so basically, if you're doing draft or sealed or any kind of limited thing, like these are the only color combinations you're probably going to want to play.
Oh, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
Just like compared to when I played, this is, I don't know, this is really interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. And Boros has a really neat mechanic, battalion. So whenever you attack with three creatures, you get some kind of bonus.
Yeah, those creatures can get a bonus. Some of them are pretty sweet. We haven't seen all the cards yet, but
no.
Should be cool.
Rubble Hulk. I want to be that.
You are a Rubble Hulk.
That's, I forget if I mentioned this before, but that sounds like Hulk and Hamburglar.
Rubble. Oh, that's awesome.
I love the way that sounds.
I used to work at McDonald's when I was in high school, and I had a shirt with the Hamburglar's face on it that I'd wear all the time.
I can see you in the uniform so easily.
Thank you, Maria. I'll take that as a compliment.
It kind of looks like Rachel Maddow wearing a McDonald's.
Yeah, so Gruul is also all about attacking, but they
Gruul seems murderous with Blood Rush.
They have a lot bigger creatures than Boros does, so if you like attacking, and you like attacking with big creatures, you should think about Gruul.
Gruul was
green,
they
are green red.
That was my third choice, would be Gruul, but they seem they seem slower than Boros.
Yep,
so
sure.
There's that.
But they pack a punch.
Right, you can't.
Sometimes it's worth the wait, but Maria has no patience.
Correct. Mm. Yeah, Gruul, there's nothing you can do about it when they Blood Rush with that trample. Like,
fuck. You can't counter it.
Nope.
You can't even counterspell that shit.
Can you Dramatic Rescue?
You could. You can do that. But Dramatic Rescue won't be in this set.
So. Yeah, but something I had a question about was Cypher. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, because Cypher is the Dimir ability. They are blue-black, and they're all about secrets and mystery and deception. And, yeah, what's your question? Do you want to read?
Sure.
Let's just read. We'll read this card. Stolen Identity.
Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target artifact or creature. Mm. Question.
Sure.
Is this only in your... on your battlefield?
On my battlefield?
Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of, like, a creature.
When it says that, it'll be under your control, unless it says otherwise.
But can it be a copy of something from the other person's battlefield?
There's only one battlefield.
The battlefield is...
Oh, so I mean, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could be from their hand?
Yep. Otherwise, it would say artifact or creature you control. So yeah, that can target anything.
All right. And then Cypher says, then you may exile the spell card encoded on a creature you control. I don't know what that means. Whenever that creature deals combat damage to a player, its controller may cast a copy of the encoded card without paying its mana cost.
What?
Encoded card?
Yeah, so it's effing confusing.
Right.
But basically what it means is when you cast that card, you'll just like put it under that creature. So it's kind of like it's enchanting that creature. And then whenever you attack and do damage, you get to make a copy of it.
What?
So it's different than a real enchantment because, like, it's not on the battlefield. It's not, like, in play.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the exile zone, but it's, like, still associated with that creature. So, like, does that make any sense?
So you just have to remember?
Well, I mean...
Well, it's there. It's just it's an enchantment that is safe from things that could target it since it's exiled.
Yeah, basically. I mean, you'll remember because you'll probably just put it underneath the creature.
Okay.
It's not like you'll put it off to the side.
Okay.
And then be like, oh yeah, that was encoded on that guy, wasn't it?
So as the player playing opposite this, you just hope that you do not deal combat damage to it.
Yeah, you'll want to either kill this creature or like bounce it back to their hand or block it, prevent it from attacking, all that stuff.
Right.
Wait, so a card that's exiled that is attached to something, does that go to the graveyard? Since it's exiled?
So no, the exile zone is like another zone. They used to call it removed from game.
Mm-hmm. Do you know like the Twilight Zone?
No, what's that?
Or the Phantom Zone?
No, what's that?
Those are...
I know AutoZone. Is it like AutoZone?
Yeah.
It's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the exile zone is like, it's just another zone. I don't even know.
Where they change your oil.
You can get your oil change there, but they charge way too much.
So, all right. So then let's say it's attached to a creature.
Yeah.
That creature gets dramatically rescued or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Then that card.
It'll still be, it's just exiled. But now, because you return that creature,
it's not associated with it. So it's
anymore.
In its own exile zone.
Right.
You can use it. Okay.
Right. Because even if they replay that creature, like as far as the game is concerned, it's just a new creature. It has nothing to do with the old creature. So it won't still be encoded on it.
And then the point is, once it's exiled, you can't, like it's not to your graveyard. You can't shuffle your graveyard back into your hand. You just can't get to it anymore.
Yeah. There's very few cards that can get stuff back from the exile zone. There are a few, but there probably won't be any in this set.
I just want to say something about Gatecrash, that all these new mechanics, this seems like this is going to be insane. Like, what's going to happen? Like, Evolve, that's pretty crazy. Frickin' Blood Rush, Extort, where you pay one to make them lose one life, and I gain one.
Yeah.
Ben's looking at me like, oh, that's cute, Maria, that you think that.
Well, I mean, it's not no different than Return to Ravnica, right?
I don't know. It seems worse. I mean, it seems like
it's the same number. Like really? Each guild has one of mechanic, which is the same as how Return to Ravnica was. It's just different colors.
Okay.
So you'll get used to it.
It just seems, you know, now it's new. It seems scary.
New things are always scary.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just like losing a loved one.
I'm going to pay. I'd pay 3 mana.
Would you pay 3 mana to make this feeling go away? History shit.
You say it so good.
It actually says history shit.
That's right. That's the name of this topic. And since we have you here, Nels, we're going to talk about the dark.
I'm going to take a history shit on the dark. You guys ready for this?
Splash.
Super ready. Mm-hmm. Nels, this was the first set you started playing with.
Yes.
1994.
It was the first expansion set, that we could call from. When we started playing, it was really the only one that you could buy. Legends, Antiquities, Arabian Nights. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called? Arabian Nights?
Yeah.
Those were the only other sets, and none of those were being printed anymore.
Yeah, and I think it was like back before Magic had started getting big, so like they maybe didn't print as many as they didn't expect the demand they would receive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sold in 8-card packs.
Yes, and
that's so small.
It was really tiny. Yeah, and sadly I didn't have time, but my special surprise was I have an unopened pack of the dark.
What?
Shut up.
And I wanted to bring it over here and open it with you guys. Maybe if you want me back on another podcast, we can do that.
Insurance.
But yeah, it's
dramatic rescue.
I actually found it on eBay, but when I was getting back into it, I got nostalgic. I'm like, oh, these old cards. And it was $5 on eBay,
which
adjusting for inflation is probably about as much as it was brand new. But I haven't opened it yet. So,
that's super cool. Okay, we're definitely going to do
that. But yeah, we actually, people were a little sad because you'd get a dark pack. I'm like, this is really small. There's not much in it.
It's not many cards.
Were all the sets previous to this that only?
Well, for some of the small sets, they would do smaller booster sizes. I think like Fallen Empires might have had smaller boosters, and then Homelands too.
And that was okay.
Yeah.
Because they were horrible.
They were horrible.
Wow.
But before that, I mean, there was only 3 other expansions before that.
Yeah.
So tell me about when you started playing Magic. How was the attitude towards it?
Well, it's one of those things that just sort of had happened at our school, and then everybody's like, hey, is this a cool thing? And then we all started. Mm.
So it was a cool thing? It wasn't, there was no stigma?
Well, among the nerds, it was cool.
Yeah.
And I was a nerd, so it was cool to me. But people really, really, really started getting into it. And it was, like you said, it was kind of on the cusp of, like, it was right when, like, you couldn't get a Mox anymore. And they're really expensive if you wanted to buy one, you know. So there were some cards that were kind of, like, legendary and, like, some people had them, you know. But it wasn't like today where there's so, you could play with any card that existed at that point. Now today, like, you kind of, you know, you play within the confines of the blocks if you want, you know. And there's so many different kinds. But in that one, it was like, oh, he's got a Black Lotus. Like, of course you're going to use that in your deck. Why wouldn't you, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of the landscape when I started.
Yeah, there was a perception, I remember when I started, that, like, you need a lot of money to get all these cards. Otherwise, you could never win.
Yeah. Yeah, there was the people in my group who bought their way into, you know, the good cards. They could buy a Mox.
The rich kids.
Yeah, or the stupid kids who would spend $100 of their Hardee's check.
or McDonald's.
Buy a card. Oh yeah, McDonald's. But there was some crafty kids. Like there was a guy I play with who I still play with now, who he was the first person to have a Mox. He was the first person to have an icy manipulator.
Ooh.
Which was
that sounds like a icicle dildo.
It was actually an icicle. It was like a ball. It was an amaze ball, kind of. It was just a hand holding a ball.
I've killed Ben.
Yeah, an orb.
But that came back in like fourth edition or something. Yeah. But at the time, it's an artifact. It costs like one mana, and then you pay one mana and tap it, and you can tap any card on the playing field.
Yeah. Oh.
So he had that and a Royal Assassin, and that way he could kill any creature.
Combo.
Yeah.
Is the Royal Assassin like a royal person who kills, or someone who kills royals?
He could kill anybody.
I think he works for the he's like the
okay.
The he's so good, assassin. Yeah. Because he could, yeah. And that was one of the things. Like I have a Lord of the Pit is 7/7 flying trample.
Yeah.
I tap him. All right, this tiny little dude with a knife kills him. Oh, all right, that sucks.
this set had a couple famous cards in it though.
Yeah, there was. I mean,
kind of remain famous to this day.
There's one that I can think of that we use. Yeah, there was not one person in our playing Magic in our whole group that didn't have Maze of Ith.
Yeah,
I mean that was.
I had one of those too. Yeah, it was a sweet card.
What did it do?
It's a land, and if you tap it, it untaps target attacking creature, and yeah, it can neither deal nor receive damage in combat. So it just negates one attack.
So cool. If you're attacking with that 7/7. Lord of the Pit, huge demon. It's like, oh, he got lost in my maze.
Yeah, exactly. Even if he's maybe larger than the maze, he still gets lost in it. But because of that,
nowadays it wouldn't work because there's GPS nowadays.
Yeah, that's good a different point. Card. That was from a different set.
GPS.
Modern times. Everybody had Maze of Ith. Then everybody had also Strip Mine in their deck, which was an Antiquities card. Which was land, tap it for one colorless mana, or sacrifice it to destroy target land. Because there wasn't very many ways of getting rid of lands, and Maze of Ith was just a giant pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So everybody's deck had Maze of Ith, Strip Mine, and Sol Ring, for sure.
Ooh,
what's Sol Ring?
Sol Ring.
The artifacts, can you even have those anymore? I don't think they stopped making them.
Yeah, I mean, they're not legal in very many formats.
It's one mana artifact. Tap it to get two colorless mana. It was amazing.
Maria's in disbelief. Yeah, it was an absurd card.
Jeez.
And like you would, I have one somewhere. And it's like, yeah, why would you not put that in every deck? Yeah,
and the funny thing was, it wasn't an absurd card to us at that time. Because it was like, oh, this is just something everybody has.
Yeah.
Right. Nowadays, it's like, oh my fucking God, it's so good.
Yeah. Because you could play like on turn one, and then on turn two, you could cast something for four mana.
Put down a land, put down a Mox, put down a Sol Ring on the first land. You have three mana in the first turn.
It was a different time.
It was really a different time back then. Things are different.
People wore bell bottoms. Phones had cords.
Retro bell bottoms.
Nixon was in office.
I remember. I remember the game of Magic I was playing when I heard Nixon resign.
Okay. Well, it's funny. I was just looking at this. So I started with Eldrazi again when we started up again.
When you got back into it.
Yeah, and there were cards.
Rise of Eldrazi was like a year or two ago.
About that. Mm. And it has its hallmark was these giant, otherworldly like Lovecraftian monsters from another dimension. And there's one card here that you guys may be familiar with it called Emrakul, the Aeon's Torn. It costs 15 colorless mana, straight up 15. And it's 15/15 flying, protection from colored spells. He can't be countered. When you cast him, you take an extra turn after this one.
Oh, well.
When he's put into the graveyard from anywhere, the owner shuffles the graveyard into the library, and also Annihilator 6, which means when he attacks, whoever he's attacking has to get rid of six permanents before anything happens.
But how do you ever cast that for 15?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obviously kind of a late game.
It's pretty hard, yeah.
But when I got that card, or when we saw that card, I was like, if you took me back to 94 when I first started this and said, Nels, Please make the dumbest, most ridiculous card you could ever, like the most powerful card in the universe.
Yeah.
It still wouldn't be as strong as that card. That's how far this game has come. You know, like it blows my mind.
Yeah, that card's insane.
For an Eldrazi, that was like you cast it and then you get to put in a card into play that isn't in, like, it's not in your deck. Like, you can and it's get like, any card that you
get
want.
Get target card, target Eldrazi card you own from outside the game. Like,
reading these mechanics,
go like, get a knife and literally stab the other player.
But I mean, you know, when I started, like, banding was a thing, right? The mechanic of banding, which is the dumbest.
Where you start a band with your creatures.
That would have been better than banding.
What was it?
Banding, they don't put it on cards anymore because it was so confusing. Mm-hmm. It's basically like if you're blocking with a creature with banding. Like, you get to decide as the blocker how the damage gets assigned. So you can block with a ton of tiny creatures, and it's like, oh, you just do one damage to each one. And then I kill your guy. Yeah, it's so bad. But yeah, and then, like, if you're attacking, you can, like, attack in a band, and that is, I was really confusing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so coming from banding to you get an extra turn, you annihilate six of his cards, you win, can't counter it. Ha ha ha. It kind of blows my mind.
And one thing that I think is funny about that card is there's two things. One, it says when you cast it, you take another turn outside the additional turn. And then also, if it would go into your graveyard instead, shuffled into your deck, like. The reason that phrase is on there is because there are so many cards that let you put a card into play from your graveyard that they're like, well, we better make sure this never goes into someone's graveyard.
Exactly.
And then the when you cast it, you get an extra turn. Like, half the time, you don't even cast that card. You just get it into play some other way. Yeah, so you don't even get the extra turn.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Time Walk, that was a big one when I started.
Ooh, we talked about that two episodes ago. Yeah.
Part of the Power 9.
Oh, I'm sorry, one more really quick thing. Oh, yeah. In my nostalgia trip, I actually went and also on eBay bought fairly cheaply a Lich. Ooh. Remember Lich? It was
kind of.
I think it's a 4 black mana, and it's an enchantment. Although it's also, I think it's one of those weird enchantments where it's like enchant self or something like that.
Yeah. Enchant world.
Yeah, something really weird. It is... When it's in play, it says, you lose all life. Now, your life, basically, it trades your life number for whatever, however many cards you have out. So every time you take 1 point of damage, you have to get rid of a card. So my friend of mine discovered this, and this was a totally legit tactic back then, where it was the Lich Mirror Universe combo, where you'd cast Lich, and then you'd have an artifact called Mirror Universe, which, when you use it, you swap life totals with your partner. So since you have no life, you win. So it was an instant win combo.
Nice.
And it was totally legit.
Those are my favorite combos. I love combos.
I was trying
I'm
to...
I'm not talking about the pretzel snacks either.
I'm talking about the pretzel snacks.
I'm sure.
Pretzel with cheddar.
Mm.
Can't do better.
Nice.
I was trying to think of the name of the woman who was on Britain's Got Talent, who was really ugly, you know?
Susan Boyle?
Susan Boyle enchanted the world.
Oh my God.
God, that joke almost didn't come out.
That would have been a shame.
Nels liked it. Great moments in addiction. So I was recently at the doctor, right? And
is there a magic card growing inside of you?
I ate one. And I had to get a shot. And the nurse is like, just go to your happy place. And I want you to guess what I thought of.
Maze of Earth.
I'll tell you.
Were you cuddled up with a Golgari long legs?
You know me too well. No, it was me pulling a Vraska in the draft. I was so, like, awesome because I never had before.
Nice.
And when I did it, I was just like, oh, sweet.
Did your insurance require you to admit what your happy place was before you got the shot? I hope so.
And I was sitting there like, Maria, is this really your happy place? Like, what's wrong with you? But then I was like, no, I really, really was. Wow. Like, I was like, that was a moment when I felt really good. I was having some fun. And something good happened. That's awesome. So there you go.
Wow.
Well, that's our episode for this week. Thank you, Nels, for being our guest host.
Thank you for letting me be your guest, Nels.
You've taught me so much.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
You've given me an insight into how magic used to be.
Oh, my gosh.
Back in the days of plaid shirts and a feeling of kind of like ennui.
This kind of happens today, too. I wish I had my card still, because then I could have... I could have a college fund for my kid.
What happened to him?
I don't know. I don't remember. But I had a Mox.
Really?
I don't know if it's worth anything anymore, but Ali from Cairo, that was one of my favorite cards.
Oh, nice.
Which is, you don't lose when he's in the game. Like, you just can't lose.
Oh.
A fix that would reduce your life total to less than one, reduce it to one instead. I got him once in Momir basic. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, long story short, I had... Oh, the dual lands thing I was talking about before?
Yeah.
I collected dual lands before people thought they were cool, and I had no idea either.
Sweet.
And I ended up having something like 50 of them.
Nels, where are these cards?
Find those cards.
I don't know what happened.
Did you sew them, into your car seats?
No, I think I sold them. I must have sold them a long time ago. Because the dual lands were, when I stopped playing, were like $30 each, and I had like 30 of them.
Yeah, they're more than that, no. Especially the ones that make blue.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, I wish I still had my old cards.
One time on the bus, I saw this trade go down, and this girl convinced this guy to trade like 3 dual lands for like 7 cards from a pack of homelands.
Oh my god.
That was like
the whole set of homelands. Times 5 is not like, worth that.
It was like she opened a homelands pack, took out the rare. It was like her. I like convinced him to trade his dual lands for those cards.
You didn't intervene?
I hated that guy, so I was okay with it. I was just jealous.
That's an interesting thing too. Really quick, I know I'm extending this podcast over and over. Now cards list how rare they are.
Yeah.
They didn't used to do that, so people would have no idea if that was a good card or not.
Yeah.
There was no internet.
And I remember
no internet.
Like,
yeah.
Scry maybe didn't say.
Yeah, exactly.
They wanted. Like, Richard Garfield said that he wanted, like, the rarity to be unknown, so it'd be, like, part of the game.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
But that was, like, before they realized, like, how many of these cards they were going to sell.
Right. And when the secondary market opened up, where all of a sudden you would buy a Black Lotus for $500.
Yeah.
Like, well, people need to stop getting screwed over. Like, kids would get screwed over.
Exactly.
Or people would get mad that they got screwed over.
Sure.
Because they weren't smart enough to know that this was an amazing card.
It's kind of like Beanie Babies.
It is, yeah. I do remember, like, when I started playing, it was an embarrassingly long amount of time before I understood how the rarity worked.
Yep.
Yeah, it was, like, years.
Same.
I get it.
Now I want to play Magic again, you guys.
Yay, we've been successful. Let's do it. All right, we're going to play some Magic. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. For me.